This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Delcar.
And I'm Brendan Nell. Welcome to episode two. Today, we're looking back at the Springboks win in, at Loftus Versfeld. We look at Eddie Jones's outburst and calling a journalist a smart ass. We talk to the journalist in that situation as well about what happened. And we look at the All Blacks win in Mendoza against Argentina. And then the big game this weekend, the Springboks versus the All Blacks, virtually the final of the rugby championship.
Don't be a smart ass.
Okay, first up, we're going to talk to Ken Borland, who's the journalist who Eddie Jones referred to as the smart ass this weekend. I'm sure everybody's probably seen the video by now, but if you haven't, he has a quick audio reclip of it, and straight after that, we'll talk to Ken.
Eddie, you expressed your disappointment during the week that you weren't playing the first choice Springboks side.
Well,
changed a bit of relief now?
No, I'll tell you what, yeah, I could add it, mate. South Africans are good at winning, so you don't have to be a smart ass, mate.
So, yeah, the biggest news of the weekend wasn't so much the Springboks beating the Wallabies, but Eddie Jones's outburst at the press conference. Both of them, you and I, were both there. We were in the room.
I have to say that we kind of predicted something like this on last week's show. You don't just get the Wallabies when they are in town. You get Eddie Jones as well. So, we got both last week.
We did. And a certain journalist who's joining us now, this podcast, a certain smartass, Ken Borland, who, if you didn't know, he was the guy who asked that question, that sort of got Eddie a bit hot in the collar, which is quite surprising because, you know, Eddie gives it as much as he gets it, so a lot more, in fact. And Ken, how does it feel to be the world's number one smartass at the moment?
Well, I kind of blame you two because I was sitting next to Liam in the rugby test, and as usual, he was inspiring me with all sort of Eddie Jones comments. I think we all love and respect Eddie greatly, old odd job. And then, of course, Brendan, it's your video that went round the world. You're the guy who, if it wasn't for you, you know, I would just be nicely anonymous and it would just be, you know, no one would have known about the incident. So, yeah, it's it's a great honor to be – to be called a smart ass by someone who I reckon is the chief smart ass of the all. I mean, of them all. Is there anyone who's more of a smart ass than Eddie Jones?
Yeah, you obviously came armed with that question. So, Eddie obviously didn't take kindly to it. And I wonder if you'd have had the same reaction had they lost by a point or by 2 points.
I don't think I would have asked the question then, Liam, to be fair. I mean, I think, you know, they were soundly beaten. I mean, let's be honest, the Springboks left some tries on the table there. And the fact that the Wallabies, I mean, they scored, if you think about it, they scored the first try of the match, I think it was after about 8 minutes or something, and then they scored again in the 81st minute. So between that time, the score was 43-0 to South Africa. So, I mean, that was a hiding. So, you know, if you're going to talk smack before the game about taking down the Springboks, and now you're upset that it's a half-baked Springbok team and you get clapped like that, then, you know, I think you deserve some comeback.
The other thing is that a lot of people don't realize is it was probably the Australian media who started all this stuff because earlier in the week there was a question to Russie and them about disrespecting the Aussies by picking a B team, and that was asked in the Springbok press conference.
Yeah, I remember, and I also was very interested because in that press, I mean, I think I asked Russie and Jacques Nienaber about Eddie Jones's mind games, and I thought Russie made a very interesting point that he believes a lot of the time Eddie does these things not to throw the opposition off, but for his own team to somehow sort of motivate them and get them up in some way. So, you know, I don't know if he thought telling his team that the Springboks had disrespected them would get them up, you know, would motivate them more. But it certainly backfired quite spectacularly.
The one thing, I suppose the last question I need to ask you there as well is how's the reaction been on your side? I mean, we've all seen the comments. I've seen the comments on my videos. And there are various takes, mostly positive towards you, but from one or two that feel that you were disrespecting him. How's your reaction been?
I've only actually seen one negative comment, and it's from someone who seems to have a problem with journalists in general. So I'm not too.
They're not hard to find these days, are they?
So, it's been quite nice actually to have all the positive feedback, and it's been a lot more pleasant than I think the last time when my comments had sort of a big reach, which was during SJN. When my comments were not nearly as popular maybe as this time.
Our show's not long enough for you to delve into that at this moment, Ken.
Probably best left undelved, yeah.
Ken,
while we've
what did surprise me the other day was because I offered Eddie a bit of an out when he was having a go at you, because I tried to ask a question after he had a go. And then he started answering me and then couldn't help himself but to turn his head back towards you and sort of exactly include you in the answer he was giving me.
You took a team to Carisbrook many years ago after defeated Loftus. Are you looking for a similar performance next time?
Yeah, no, 100%. We'll bounce back. Like, we were well and truly beaten today by a Springbok side that old mate's calling the B team, right? So I never knew there was a Springbok side that was called the B team. But now we have a new term.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
You don't have to be a smart ass, mate.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, he could have just left it where it was, answered your question, end of press conference, left it there. And I mean, I think most people would have probably then just forgotten about it. The fact that he decided to come back for more, I think, is what turned it into an issue.
Well, Ken, thanks for that. And thanks for joining our podcast.
It's an honor and a privilege, guys. Thanks very much. And all the best.
As always, we have a bottle of wine, and today we've got something from the Himalayan Arda Valley, where our producer Mavula is from. So we brought it just for him. It's Seven Springs Syrah, one of my personal favorites, Liam. So let's open it at a breathe.
Yeah, I didn't go pop because it's got a screw function to it.
And we don't have a corkscrew here today. That's the other thing. So a screw top is always better than...
Very functional, Brendan.
Yeah. So while we let that breathe, let's have a look back at the Loftus-Fairsvale test. A huge win by the Springboks. I think a lot better than we all expected. I think we all expected a good performance. But with all the talk of the B team this week and all the comments from Eddie, we knew we were going to get something. We did get it at the press conference. But on the field, the Boks were rampant.
They were. It was an emphatic win in the end. And there certainly were some questions before the test about how effective that lineup might be, because obviously 13, 14 players were dispatched to Auckland last week. And obviously questions around some combinations that were untested in the Loftus test. But of course, I mean, if you look at that performance, the Boks looked like a well-oiled machine. They explained afterwards that they'd been together for a couple of weeks. So it wasn't as if the guys were thrown together, you know, on the eve of the game. So they played a lot of cohesion, especially up front. And then, of course, you've got that dynamo in the back three. Kurtley Arendse continues this remarkable scoring spree. What's it now? 10 tries in 8 tests or something.
Yeah.
Hat trick of tries last week. So if you've got a pack going forward and you've got three quarters to seize the opportunities that come their way, it's got the makings of a Bok performance that, as we say, was quite emphatic, and the Wallabies thoroughly put to the sword.
Yeah, I think we mentioned Kurtley. He was the obvious standout man of the match, 3 tries. There's a corner there in Loftus now is becoming the KLA corner, Kurtley's corner. I think of other players that put their hands up, Marco van Staden was exceptional. In fact, 2 of his big carries led to 2 of Kurtley's tries. Andre Estes in the midfield was the real agent of chaos, as they call him. And, there's a couple of other guys. Valera Rue was very instrumental at the back. Marnie Lebok had a great game as well. And then John Klein, Peter Steff, the toy, Erchis Neyman when he came on, and Grant Williams when he came on, injected some speed.
Another dynamo.
There was so much good for the Springboks in that, and so much they could leave for Auckland with, on the high. But that's the good. The bad was probably the Wallabies. They were way off pace, and Eddie's got a lot of work cut out for him. And then for me, the ugly was, unfortunately, Loftus didn't have any water during the game, so you can just imagine 50,000 people.
Well, and there was certainly enough brandy, Brendan.
Well, that's part of the other part of the problem, because as we've probably seen on social media, there was a big fight that broke out as well, which, you know, wasn't great. And then we've heard one of our colleagues, Derek Albert's phone was pickpocketed, and there was a couple of people that were hit by this sort of gang of pickpocketers that sort of moved through the stadium as well. You know, that's all isn't great for a Springbok test, and I'm sure they're going to have a look at that.
They ought to do that. News that they are not going to do anything about those brawlers is disappointing, because I think with the technology we've got at our disposal these days, that one can certainly, you can track people down if you have sufficient will to do so. But apparently word from the Bulls is that there's not much they can do, which is disappointing, because if I were to take my family to Loftus, whether we're going to sit in a suite, whether we're going to sit in the main stand or the eastern stand, I expect them to be safe. So they need to tidy up the act.
Yeah, and I always think of it, from just another point of view, from a kid that's sitting in the stand, your dad gets involved in a fight like that. How do you look at your parents like that? And how do you look at friends and the colleagues that get involved in things like that? I don't know. I think you pay a lot of money for the games. And unfortunately, I mean, we both probably saw a couple of people who had had a bit too much fun before the time and had a bit too much brandy before the time. And I'm not sure what they remember of the test, but it probably wasn't much. it's not great. And I mean, we all want to enjoy ourselves and we all want to enjoy a drink at the game. But, there is a line, and some people cross that line way too easily.
Yeah. Look, you want people to have fun. But, I mean, there is, as you say, there is a line that you shouldn't cross. But unfortunately, we have seen this time and time again. There are just some folks who they go to these matches, and it's almost as if that is what they want to do. It's almost as if they are going to pick a fight with somebody. And then, I mean, those people should be banned. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and look, far from us to preach, because we're going to be enjoying some wine now while we're doing this podcast, but far from us to preach about alcohol, etc., but drink responsibly. I think that's the key word there. Speaking about being responsible, I see Sam Kane's owned up of tripping the fan, and there's as New Zealand does, there's a way, way overblown outcry about that. Which I think is quite bizarre, to be very honest.
I have to say that when I saw it initially, I thought, oh, fair play on Sam Kane. I mean, because pitch invaders, once you cross the boundary, once you're on the field of play, you basically, you're not entirely sure what's going to happen. I mean, but this is something that you've brought on to the spectacle that's unfolding in front of you. So, he lashed out by, sticking a leg out, and this person fell down, got up and continued running. You actually don't want players or officials in that situation to get involved in that. Yeah. They're supposed to be security personnel to douse those fires. In this case, this person conveniently ran past the All Blacks captain and he decided to stick a foot out.
Well, I think about that as well. I mean, he could have done a Johnny Bairstow and just picked the guy up and then maybe slammed him over the boundary or something like that. But, I don't know. I think you take your your fate into your own hands if you do that. And to be very honest, I mean, you get what you deserve. And I think, all this outcry in New Zealand about Sam Kane, I think we sit here and we think it's quite funny.
Yeah, and also the person who, the perpetrator or the intruder, is getting now far too much airplay than, should be given to a person like that, because, in some cases maybe that's exactly what people want.
Exactly. On the field, the All Blacks were impressive, extremely impressive in the scrum. And I've sort of been sitting wondering, were they that good or were the Pumas just that bad?
I've got not a theory, but I think something that played a significant role, on Saturday was the fact that the Pumas as a team hadn't been together for that long. They were chucked together sort of 2 weeks before that test. Now, you compare that to the luxury the All Blacks have, the Boks have, and maybe even the Wallabies, where guys can get, they spend 4, 5, sometimes 6 weeks together over a couple of months. They didn't have that luxury. Their top players play all over the world. And their head coach, Michael Checker, would have had to work miracles in the last 2 weeks to prepare them for an All Blacks test. That's probably the All Blacks have always played well in Argentina, so that would have been a bit of a nightmare scenario for him. So I think that certainly plays a role. I mean, I don't want to sit here and say the All Blacks didn't play well. Of course they played well, and they deserved that win. But I think as far as the Argentine performance is concerned, they were probably a little bit undercooked.
Yeah, and I also think it's one of those games where, you know, things start going right for the All Blacks. A referee, especially the Australian referees, Angus Gardner, and this is not bagging the referee, but sometimes referees get this in their head that the one team's doing everything right and the other team just can't buy a penalty. And we saw Montoya a couple of times in that game go to the ref and say, it's just not consistent, the rulings. And at times he had a point, but you know, it's one thing saying that, but when the All Black team gets on the front foot, they're very hard to stop, and I think that's just what happened. I expect a much better game. It's going to be interesting, the game in Sydney, because both teams really coming off bad losses. So it would be interesting to see who gets it right. And Eddie Jones and Michael Checker, two gentlemen who will definitely dominate the airwaves ahead of that test again.
Yeah, and I suspect one of them post-match is going to be pretty grumpy as well. So strap in for that.
Yeah, and that's the end of part two. Now we're going to come back and we'll talk about the Springbok team that was named, one of their strongest teams, and, you know, playing in Auckland, how difficult that is for the Boks. Okay, let's sample the wine. Now, Liam's pouring a lovely glass of wine for me here. Liam, seeing as the Boks are in Auckland this weekend, let's beg the question as we go into this section. Of exactly how late is it that you, how early can you open a bottle of wine?
Well, somebody will say, well, it may be sort of 9:30 in the a.m. if you're going to watch a Springbok test in New Zealand for South African viewers, that it's, you know, 10, 11, 12 hours, you know, ahead in New Zealand. So that gives you license to open a bottle of wine. But I mean, I don't particularly subscribe to any of those rules. You know, if the wine is there and it's there to be consumed and you feel up to it, then why the hell not?
Well, I mean, you can always vary it and maybe have a champagne breakfast.
Yeah, well.
There's lots of things you can do.
It's like in cricket. You basically pick off the singles, you know, as you start, get a feel for it, and then, you know, you can, you know, reach for the boundary a little bit later on.
Open your shoulders as with every Springbok try, so to speak.
Absolutely.
But yeah, okay, the Boks are in Auckland this week. They've named a team, pretty much the team that we expected. Very much their frontline players. Vili Leroux, the Kanyu Am, both of them in. The front row is the same as well, which was a bit of a... I thought Malcolm Marks might get a start in Auckland.
I thought so too. But then if you think about it, there's probably the temptation to play that front row from last weekend, keep that intact, because they did go more than okay. Got a lot of front football, so keep that intact. And then we've seen over the last couple of seasons Malcolm Mark stepping off the bench and making a considerable contribution, not just in the scrums but in the tight loose. He's obviously a bit of a terrier when it comes to turning over possession as well, and late in a game that is absolutely key. So that selection again is understandable. The fact that he went over with that advanced party probably threw a bit of a curveball, but you can understand that he will be playing off the bench this week.
I think the thing that hit me the most, and I think we're the Boks' biggest strength there, we know what this is, basically the same team that's, you know, won in 2018 and 2019, drew there, but that bench, that 6-2 split on the bench. If you look at those forwards on there, Dwayne Vermeulen, Peter Steph Du Toit, Thomas Du Toit, Vincent Koch, Malcolm Marks, and I'm missing one now. I'm thinking of the other loose forward. It would be Ergie Snyman. You put those six guys. Those six guys would probably walk into every single Springbok, any national team worldwide.
Yeah.
And to have that quality of a forward pack on the bench, and then Grant Williams' pace and Marnie Le Bok as well. I mean, that really gives the Boks some real good impetus in that second half.
Absolutely. From conversations early in the season when the Boks were still in camp, leading up to the international season, there was the point that was stressed by the coaches that they are looking for versatility when they put their World Cup squad together. And I think what we've seen now already is you've got players like Damien Willemse and Grant Williams, and there are others. I mean, you can chuck Cheslin Kolbe in different positions as well. Players will give you the luxury to go with a 6-2 split, because you have to have, as they always say, you have to have like-for-like replacement, certainly among the forwards, so that you don't compromise your output at all. But among the backs, we're only going to go with two backs, that you have players who are interchangeable and obviously adaptable. And again, you know, that selection or the guys available to them gives them that opportunity again. So if I'm a coach coaching against them, it'd be a bit of a nightmare, because to predict what they're going to do is very difficult. It's one of those things. Even if it doesn't work this weekend, it's always a tool for the Springboks to use when they feel that they can use it.
I was speaking to another colleague of ours as well, Gavin Rich, and I was saying to him, we're almost at that point now. We used to be envious a couple of years ago when the All Blacks used to bring, you know, the two different teams. They'd send the one to Argentina and the one to South Africa. And, you know, the Boks have almost got themselves into a point now where they've got just as much depth. They can play two different teams on consecutive weekends on two different continents.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a very strong side. And in many ways, it's a predictable sort of starting 15. If I have a slight concern, it would be around goal kicking. So with Andre Pollard obviously not available due to injury, we're back in the same territory we were last year, where, to be fair, in the first instance, it sort of bit them in the back against Ireland, where the Boks left quite a few points out there, with a couple of guys having a potted goal. But the following test, against France in Marseille, the Boks went blemish-free off the tee in that test. So it worked out for them then. Goal kicking certainly wasn't that important against Italy and against England, you could probably argue as well. If I have a slight concern, it would probably be that, because I think the All Blacks probably a little bit more settled in that department.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if they play Damon McKenzie again at Fly-Off. That'd be interesting. But one of the Barretts will play, and they'll probably kick from their side. The Boks, of course, have some other options. Cheslin can kick, Faf can kick. But to be honest, neither are really recognized at test level. They've done it at club level.
And that's the problem.
And Damon Willems is a great player, but he's also a confidence player. And we've seen his head dip, him and Marnie Lebok. If they miss a kick or two, their head dips a bit, and it affects the rest of their play. Mm. So hopefully that doesn't happen, but it's shaping up to be an epic test in Auckland.
Mm. Yeah, look, if things off the kicking tee doesn't work out for them in the first half, there's obviously the option of getting Marnie on earlier than maybe they anticipated. So, you know, there is, from that perspective, a plan B.
And then just looking around, I think a lot of people maybe don't understand how difficult it is to play in Auckland. Well, the records probably speak for that themselves. Yeah, they're not playing at Eden Park, so in one way they're probably protecting their record there against the Boks. in another way, I mean, just, yeah, you can understand why the Boks sent the guys over, because we've both done that trip. It's a horrible 12-hour Qantas trip. Or even if you're just unlucky enough to do the Singapore version, then you get there, you leave Sunday and you get there on Tuesday afternoon, and you feel like you're in another time zone, another world, basically.
Yeah. When you leave here, I think it's QF64. That's the flight number, isn't it? Infamous. All the Super Rugby teams over the years would be familiar with QF64, departing Johannesburg for Sydney. And yeah, it's a long haul, and then you arrive in Sydney sort of late afternoon, have to sit in transit for about 3.5 hours, or close on 3 hours, before you board for Auckland or Christchurch, depending where you're going in New Zealand, and that's another 3.5 hours. And invariably, if you've been on that Qantas flight, you get to New Zealand after 11 in the evening, which means if you're lucky, you're going to get your hotel around midnight. And your body is speaking different languages to you, because it's just, part of you wants to sleep. The other part says, no, we need to stay up and sort of tire yourself out a little bit more, and then you sleep. You have this sort of conflicted body when you arrive there, and you need to sort of sort yourself out over the next few days, because you the first 2 days, you're a zombie.
And inevitably, if you know us as well, then we do try and tire ourselves out. We normally find a place to have something to just take the edge off. And we end up coming back quite late to the hotel, and we make the most of it. But it does affect you the next day. And the combination of maybe having one or two drinks and jet lag is not always the nicest. And then, of course, you've got the game. Auckland is notoriously not great towards visiting teams anyway. One of the most bizarre games, and I'm sure that our listeners will probably remember this, is the time that Bismarck Du Plessis had this amazing tackle on Dan Carter and then got yellow carded for it. And I remember sitting there and all the New Zealanders around me, and I was with one of our friends, Louis Davidias, who, of course, is very quiet and calm and composed in a press box. Like, and I got quite upset, and I wanted the referee to talk to the referee, and they were all like stunned. Like, why would we want that? Because this is what happens. And yeah, and I mean, things like that happen when you play the All Blacks in Auckland. The most bizarre stuff happens against the visiting teams. Yeah, it may be coincidence, but it just everything seems to go the All Blacks' way, and you need to be about 20% better than them to actually win a test there.
Oh, absolutely! It is exceptionally tough. I mean, it's the cold. It's the sort of, no, I won't say hostility. It is hostile, but it's not. You know, I can imagine what it's like for visiting teams who go to Loftus, for instance. So there is an element of hostility, I suppose. But it's a very tough place to win at, because also in the build up to the test, the entire country seems to be consumed by this one game. In fact, as journalists, as you arrive there and they ask you what's your purpose, why are you visiting New Zealand, and you explain why you're there, then that person who's supposed to stamp your passport is the first person that week will tell you, oh, mate, you've got no chance.
Yeah. Now, and then the next one is usually the receptionist at the hotel who will tell you how your tight head's going to suffer. And she hasn't played any rugby at all, but she knows the ins and outs of tight head play. So, you certainly get the feeling. But it's a wonderful country to tour, beautiful country. But it is a tough place to play for the Box.
Any rugby fan should go to New Zealand to sort of soak all of that up. And by the same token, Wales is another destination, yes, if you're rugby mad, to experience sort of a test match week.
Yeah, and I think they probably said the same about Loftus with all the brandy. But yeah, well, okay, let's look at the game now. It's not being played at Eden Park, it's at Mount Smart Stadium. Strange venue. I don't think the Box even know how that venue plays.
No, they don't. They've got absolutely no idea. I know they will put out the party line, and the party line would be like, it doesn't actually matter where we play New Zealand as long as we play, because it's a huge privilege. So, yeah, we can't say anything about how the wind will swirl or what anything about the surface. We just don't know. But in that sense, also, it's a journey into the unknown for the All Blacks.
Yeah, it is. And, well, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. I think, you know, I know we all want this game we want the Box to win this game, but I suppose there's a bigger picture, and they're going to play each other again at Twickenham, and this has to be a step forward again. I don't think the Box are in a bad space. I think it'd be quite bullish to expect a victory in Auckland. I'd hope it'd be a very close game, and obviously we'd hope the Box would win, but if we have to look at predictions then, I'd say probably the Box will come close. It will be a three-point game.
Yeah.
But I'm going to sit a bit on the fence on this one, but and hope for another Chisholm Colby or Herschel Yankees glory moment. Yeah, even think back to Bullock Karate, Ricky January.
Ricky January, yeah.
Ricky January's moment that, way back
the
then.
The way that ball bounced and sat on his belly, it is just, stuff of legend.
Because that just makes it so much better when it's such a close game and you win in that last moment. So hoping for one of those, I'm going to back the Box, but I think it's going to be extremely close.
Yeah, I think it will be close, but as I said earlier, I just hope that the goal kicking, I mean, you only need to miss one or two for it to really bite you.
Yeah.
And you don't see, especially if he plays Richie Mwanga, missing too many. So, yeah, I think 3-4 points, that's it.
Yeah, I hope the bomb squad's going to monster them. I really do. Mm. But All Black teams don't normally get monstered, and it's going to be an extremely close and interesting game. And I think we'll all be glued to our TVs with maybe a glass of wine at 9:30 in the morning.
Well, if it says Seven Springs, let's hope Seven Springboks get onto the score sheet.
Yeah, that should be good. Well, that's it for this week. I think tune in again next week. We're going to do the aftermath of the test, and I'm sure there'll be a lot to talk about. And I'm sure either Michael Checo or Eddie Jones will give us a couple of quotes for the pod.